Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back, everybody. It's hour two. Toker Talk Radio is in effect, and our phone line is open. You can call live at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565. And we'll take your calls, your comments, your questions. And we will enjoy talking to you. I want to get back to the main stuff for a second, because these people are going to have to learn that I look shit up. I've got all of the initiatives at my fingertips, and you can get them too. I've not only got the full text of all five legalization initiatives up online, I've annotated it. I've got my notes off to the side so you can, you know, read this in like plain English in some cases. Or just skip through and see what the highlights are. All five are available. They're all free. They're all in PDF form with hyperlinks, so you can jump from heading to heading. And you can find them at my short code address, which is rad-r.us. And that's where I do all my short codes, rad-r.us, and then slash, and then each one of the initiatives has its own code. And keep in mind, the codes are all uppercase. That's important. They have to be all capitalized. But rad-r.us slash, then we've got CA-AUMA2. That's the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, Prop 64 in California. CA-AUMA2. And the 2 is there because they published one originally and then they amended it. And so the 2 is the latest version. CA-AUMA2. For the rest of them, it's the state-CRMLA, C-R-M-L-A, for campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol, right? So you got your AZ-CRMLA, NV-CRMLA, MA-CRMLA, and ME-CRMLA. So you can read them all. You can look it up for yourself. Whenever you get one of these claims from the opponents, we can go straight to the text and prove it's right or wrong. So I wanted to get back to this thing about employment because I was having trouble finding it. That Governor LePage mentioned that there was no way they would force employers. Employers would be forced to have to hire pot smokers. That's what he said, right? So this is from the Maine Regulation and Taxation of Marijuana Act that's being voted on. Section 2454, line 2, employment policies. This chapter may not be construed to require an employer to permit or accommodate the use, consumption, possession, trade, display, transportation, sale, or growing of cannabis in the workplace. This chapter does not affect the ability of employers to enact and enforce workplace policies restricting the use of marijuana by employees, or to discipline employees who are under the influence of marijuana in the workplace. What they're hanging their hat on, what LePage is trying to go with, is in section 2454, line 3, the very next line. It says, school, employer, or landlord may not discriminate. A school, employer, or landlord may not refuse to enroll or employ or lease to or otherwise penalize a person 21 years of age or older solely for that person's consuming marijuana outside the school, employer, or landlord's property. So yes, you can still have a drug-free workplace program. Nobody can smoke pot in the workplace or have it at the workplace if they don't want. But you can't discriminate a guy simply because he's a pot smoker. And LePage wants you to think that means, oh, they're going to be smoking pot in the workplace. No, it means just like drinkers, after work we can go home and enjoy a relaxing substance and go to work the next day and be just fine. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more here from Canada. We're going to talk about the...
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Missed my time, Q. Damn it.
Every strain, every sale, every medical study. Keep it right here on the Cannabis Radio Network.
The cannabis industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
CannabisRadio.com keeps you in the know Monday through Friday on air and on demand with Cannabis Radio News. Presented with the definitive worldwide news source, the Associated Press. Stay informed with exclusive news on all things cannabis. Cannabis Radio News, live weeknights at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, during the Russ Belville Show, or download the daily podcast exclusively on CannabisRadio.com, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. When breaking news happens in the cannabis industry, Cannabis Radio News delivers the details first.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals, or at least they pay me to say that. A public service message from CannabisRadio.com and the Russ Belville Show.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here? You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We're live in Vancouver, British Columbia, here at the International Cannabis Business Conference and Expo. Wrapping up the story on Maine's Governor Paul LePage, I wanted to give you some of the insight from Representative Diane Russell, one of the state reps there in Maine, and one of our most valiant supporters of marijuana reform in the nation, not to mention just Maine. Representative Diane Russell, you can find her on Twitter as at Miss Wright, W-R-I-T-E, Miss Wright. And she tweeted earlier today when LePage put out that ad, she tweeted, "Can Marijuana Policy Project just hire Governor LePage to be its new spokesperson? Or maybe turn this into a primetime ad?" because there was so much reefer madness. In fact, she says, quote, "It is right out of the boy who cried wolf. If you keep telling lies or propaganda, eventually when you need them to hear the truth, they are just not going to believe you. The magical thing he did is took all the bullshit from the 1980s on and put it into one video." So right now we're in pretty good shape in Maine. 53% of Maine residents are voting yes, according to the most recent polls. So that was a poll from September. So looks like we'll be able to prove Governor LePage wrong, and not just on marijuana, but on lots of things. All right, let me get to another story of national significance in the United States, of course, dealing with our presidential election. There's been some talk over the last couple weeks. Various outlets have printed versions of the idea that Hillary Clinton has a big problem with millennials. Millennial voters just do not like the lady and are split between her and Trump and Gary Johnson, who's pulling a lot of the 18 to 30-year-old vote. And this could be problematic for her, although it's becoming less and less so as Donald Trump crashes and burns. But still, it's of concern to the Clinton campaign. And so many observers, both inside and outside of marijuana politics, have said, hey, you got five states voting on legalization. You got four states voting on medical. And when you look at the 18 to 30 demographic, their support for marijuana reform is through the roof. It's like supermajority support. So Hillary Clinton would be wise, if she wanted to pull some of that millennial vote, to get a little bit ahead of the marijuana issue and to support legalization and be more forceful about allowing the states to move forward. Well, that was kind of brought down this week with the release of some newly hacked emails of Clinton confidant John Podesta, DNC emails. And before I get too much into this, right, let me make my opinion clear on this. Like, if you're a whistleblower and you're turning over government secrets that are being held from us that are, like, unconstitutional and such, like what Edward Snowden did, you're a hero. But if you're hacking into people's private emails, you're a thief. You're violating people's privacy. And I don't care if it was Democrats that were hacked into, Republicans that were hacked into. These are people's private emails. And that's just out of bounds. Especially if we're thinking that it's likely that it's Russia that's up to this. So that, there we go. That's my opinion on the whole, just the hacking in general. But what came out of the emails is what's kind of putting the damper on this idea that Hillary might turn to the marijuana issue to attract millennials. And that is this supposed transcript of one of her speeches to Wall Street. And this was, you know, during the Bernie Sanders primary, right, where, you know, show the transcript, show the transcript. What did you say to the bankers? You say something in private that you don't say in public. Well, here was a Q&A with Xerox chief executive officer Ursula Burns, and it was framed in the language of stocks, right? And when you're doing stock exchange transactions, there's a concept called selling short, and it's complex. But what it really means is you're betting against a stock. You're betting that this stock is going to fail, and if it fails, you win. You earn money, right? So Burns said, so long means thumbs up, short means thumbs down, or long means I support, short means I don't. I'm going to give you about 10 long shorts, 10 decisions, right? So Hillary Clinton says, even if you could make money on a short, you can't answer short. And then Burns responds, you can answer short, but you've got to be careful about letting anybody else know that. They will bet against you. Again, in short sales, you try to keep that secret because you don't want people to know you're betting for a stock to lose, right? So she asks, Burns asks, so, legalization of pot? And then Hillary Clinton answers, short in all senses of the word. So the framing of that, the way that's posed, makes it sound as if Hillary Clinton is completely against, in all senses of the word, in all manner, the legalization of marijuana. And so this has been taken by a lot of people to say, aha. And plus, in the Podesta leak, there's also some other emails that where she's talking about having a public position and a private position. Right? You have to say one thing in public, but then behind closed doors, you have to say something in private that's different. Right? So this is leading a lot of people to say, see, when she says she's for rescheduling or she says let the states be the laboratories of democracy, it's bullshit because is that her public position or is it her private position? So let me offer my take on this. And you know, with the default assumption and the disclaimer that everybody knows that I'm a Hillary Clinton supporter at this point, right? Which is really more of me being a Donald Trump opposer at this point, but let's not wade into that jungle. This statement that she made to the CEO of Xerox was in March of 2014. March of 2014. And that means legal sales of marijuana in Colorado had only been going on for 2 months. We'd only had 2 months' experience with legal commercial sales. It wouldn't be until later in 2014 when Washington would start its sales. And then it would be much later before we'd have, in November, two more states in Washington, D.C. pass marijuana legalization. And then it would be later still that we'd start to get the first financial figures in on state legalization. And as of this date, have discovered that we've made about $445 million in tax revenue, or $445 million in sales with millions and millions in tax revenue. No, wait, $445 million in tax revenue is the correct figure. It's billions in sales. Get my numbers straight. This was also way before we'd had, since her March 2014 statement of this, you know, sell short statement, there have been 14 straight national polls that have shown support for marijuana legalization, with 13 of them being majorities. The latest Pew Research poll puts it at 57%. So we're going to have, I hope, a President Clinton who gets elected in a country where a majority and an increasingly reaching toward supermajority status of Americans support legalization, where the Congress, the past two sessions, has passed a appropriations rider that says you can't use federal money at the Department of Justice to interfere with state marijuana programs, where there will be, we hope, 9 legalized states covering 10% of the U.S. population, with California being one of them, with 53 members of Congress and 55 electoral votes. And we'll have 28 medical marijuana states at that point. So public position, private position, that's not my concern about Hillary Clinton, because there's one thing I can guarantee about Hillary Clinton. One thing I know for sure about her is that she is a poll-watching political follower, right? She's not going to be leading any of these issues. She's going to be careful and centrist and, you know, timid with her political capital, right? But let's look at her history. Remember when she voted for the Iraq War? And then when that became really unpopular, she switched to saying it was a mistake. Remember when she said marriage is a sacred bond between one man and one woman? And then when gay marriage became popular and legal, she switched her stance to supporting it. And remember when she was going around saying the Trans-Pacific Partnership is the gold standard of trade deals? And then Bernie Sanders ran against her, made that really unpopular, and now she's against it. So the evidence I have shows me that when Hillary Clinton takes a position, if the people are against that position in large enough numbers and the political momentum is on that side, she'll switch. She'll flip-flop. She'll move to that side. She can be pulled to the left. Not easily. I agree. She's got a whole bunch of campaign donors, and I got people that are saying, oh, but she's in the pocket of Big Pharma. She'll never move on camp. No, Big Pharma can only give so much money, and you can only buy so many ads, but if you legalize California, and again, the polls in California right now, like 60%, right? California passes, oh my God.
Hi.
experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Sometimes Liebermater just brings up the perfect break, doesn't she? So yeah, I'm not worried about this. I think her default position is going to be like Obama's. Leave it alone, let it happen, don't waste capital on it. And then she'll only get pulled leftward from there as more and more states are legalizing and we're getting better results and tax revenues and kids aren't using and cars aren't crashing and so forth. All right, we're going to take a break. Be right back. Happy 420.
We have your smoking section right here. This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat? More flavor.
What can Arizona learn from Colorado? We can tightly regulate and tax the sale of marijuana. According to the Colorado state government, marijuana use among high school students has not increased since legalization. At the same time, Colorado is generating millions in new tax dollars for public schools. Here in Arizona, we finally have a choice. We can vote yes on Prop 205 and provide $55 million to our public schools every year. Let's vote yes on Prop 205.
The Russ Belville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We are live from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and continuing our coverage here at the International Cannabis Business Conference. I've been doing some recording of the morning panels, and I'll have those uploaded to SoundCloud later this weekend. Some great activism panels and a great keynote by Dr. Gabor Maté, and I'm probably mispronouncing his name. I apologize. But some great, great stuff from his keynote. So we'll bring that to you on the SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/radicalruss, and we may have some clips for you on next week's shows. Also, speaking of next week, we've got some great shows coming to you as we continue our countdown to marijuana election night. Let's see. It'll be 21 days before the election when we get to next Monday's show. And on Monday, we'll speak with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our usual cannabis Q&A. On Tuesday, we'll be doing our preview, our review of all the latest polling that has come across on marijuana legalization. On Wednesday, we're going to have Stephanie Viskovich, a longtime Seattle area marijuana activist who is running for a seat in the House in Washington. So we'll talk to her about her campaign. On Thursday, we'll have our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment. So we'll have a great speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition and their take on what's happening on the election. And then on Friday, another great activist guest joining us from one of the marijuana reform organizations to be announced, because I haven't figured out which one yet. So all that coming up on next week's editions of the Russ Belville Show, exclusively here on CannabisRadio.com as a live stream, or you can get us on podcast by going to Stitcher, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn. I think that's all of them. So there you go. All right, for this next story, we go to Los Angeles, where NBC4 in Los Angeles has a story up called Stars Scared to Support Pot Prop. as in pop proposition. And let's see if we can just get the audio here for you from the NBC4 affiliate. Stars scared to support pot prop. And let's see. Make that play, Russ. There we go.
Next month, California voters are expected to approve.
It's kind of quiet. Let me see if we can boost that.
By a landslide. Both supporters and opponents of Prop 64 say one reason it may win is Hollywood and what's happening both on and off the screen.
Our investigative reporter, Jenna Susko, is here in the studio with that story. Jenna.
Chuck and Colleen, it's no surprise to see pot use in the movies or TV shows, or hear big-name celebrities talk about lighting up. But when it comes to backing Prop 64, most people in the industry are staying quiet, unless they stand to make a profit. Would you believe cannabis wine? Along with partner Richard Cheech Marin, Tommy Chong spent the 70s getting high on screen. And more recently...
That's it. That's how much I do.
In his garage during our interview.
It's not how little you do, it's how often you do it.
Maybe I should.
Talk show host and longtime pot proponent Bill Maher even lit a joint on live TV. From the movies to TV, marijuana is going mainstream.
This is like a Cheech and Chong movie up front.
But many celebrities are steering clear of endorsing legalization. We analyzed support for Prop 64 and found very few names from the entertainment industry. If they are donating, they're doing it anonymously through political action committees.
You see, a lot of celebrities are involved with this current election because they feel very passionate about it. I think Prop 64 is a little bit of a different animal.
Fred Cook is a PR CEO and head of USC's Center for Public Relations.
I think anytime you take a stand on an issue, there's a possibility that someone who disagrees with you is then going to not buy your product or not support your brand or not go see your movies.
Do you think anyone's afraid of speaking up about it?
Yeah. Based on... Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Singer Melissa Etheridge isn't one of them.
And while you're publicly supporting this, there aren't a lot of celebrities that are. Why do you think that is?
This whole movement is a lot like the gay movement, I think. To cross that line of the public, of your own personal space, and come out and say, this is who I am, was uncomfortable for a lot of people.
Now a recreational user, she has her own brand of cannabis-infused wine, currently only available to Californians with a medical marijuana license.
What would you say to those who see this and may think, well, of course she's going to support Prop 64. She wants to make money off of her wine.
Of course. Well, isn't that the American way? Isn't that what we do? Why not?
Tommy Chong will also profit if the prop passes.
Once it gets legal, I'll be so rich.
By selling pot and bongs, labeled Chong's Choice.
This is exactly what Big Tobacco did 100 years ago. They got their foothold in Hollywood.
Kevin Sabet worked as a drug policy advisor for Presidents Obama, Clinton, and George W. Bush.
My issue is the glamorization, the promotion, the normalization, and the commercialization. It's THC-infused gummies. It's lollipops. It's candy bars, chocolates, cookies, you know, things called pot tarts. I mean, these are real things. What I worry about is what they're saying to the kid in East L.A., what they're saying to the kid looking up to them in Hollywood, what they're saying to the kid looking up to them in Omaha, Nebraska.
Celebrities are endorsing this, it's glamorizing it, and now kids are going to be really interested. Mm-hmm. What do you say to that?
We live in a world where we constantly draw a line between our adult entertainment and our children's entertainment. I have four children. You have laws and regulations about cigarettes. You have laws and regulations about alcohol. How do we do it with all that? Through laws and regulation. That is exactly what we want for cannabis.
Glamorize it. You know, take it out of the ghetto. Take it out of the shadows, you know, yeah. More you do it, the better it is. You know. Especially for me, you know, because I'm selling it.
And testing it.
Would you like some?
And just to be clear, we politely declined his offer.
Well, we're so glad to hear that.
Yeah, so there's your... NBC4 in LA covering the celebrities that will or will not endorse marijuana legalization under Prop 64. And, you know, this is highlighted also by my recent kerfuffle on Twitter with Be Real. And it's something that I think about a lot, because one of the things that's bothered me for the longest time about the fight for marijuana legalization is how some of the people that stand the most to gain from it are the least likely to be involved in it. And that, you know, on the activism side, I'm referring to minorities generally, blacks and Latinos, who we rarely see at these activism events or marches or normal chapters. It's getting better, but it was always frustrating. Because, like, look, you know, the white kids aren't as likely to get busted. It's great that they're showing up to try to stop legal or stop prohibition, but they're not the ones that are really suffering the most from it. And on the other side of it are these celebrities who make their money, who make a lot of money off of the young people that consume their entertainment, their music, their movies. And in many cases, the music and the movies are about marijuana or glamorizing marijuana, as Sabet was saying there. So more than willing to take a profit from it, but when it comes time to step up and put your money where your mouth is, you're nowhere to be found. And I asked a lot of people, I've talked to Steve Bloom about this, who's got a lot of celebrity contacts from his work. And, he'd explain how a lot of them would be in contracts with, say, you know, Disney to be the voice on a animated feature. And if they were known to be a pot supporter, they'd lose that gig. Or, you know, how they might affect their ability to work in children's movies or, you know, get other sorts of gigs, which is okay, I guess, as far as an excuse goes. But it doesn't resonate very well to those of us who've had our careers impacted by drug testing, by prohibition, who've had to settle for less income and less upward mobility because we won't take jobs that drug test. So we've been through plenty of sacrifice economically and career-wise. And so the celebrity wants some sort of, magic sympathy for the risk it might be to their career to stand up for what's right. When that risk means you may go from an A-list celebrity to a B-list celebrity, you might not get that 8-figure deal for the gig. You might only get a 7-figure deal for some other gig. I mean, come on. Give me a break. And so as I see these celebrities now jumping into the pool, jumping into the green rush with their celebrity brands, I'm much more supportive of, say, Melissa Etheridge's cannabis-infused wine or Tommy Chong's bongs than I am of, say, something Miley Cyrus might put out. Okay? And not to pick on Miley Cyrus personally, and there's plenty of celebrities out there. Seth Rogen comes to mind, James Franco comes to mind, who are benefiting quite a bit from the cannabis culture, but not returning that money, not seeding that money into legalization, not funding these campaigns, not helping the drug policy organizations. Willie Nelson, cool. You're good in my book because you always stood for legalization. You're always upfront about it. And you've lent your name, your voice, your likeness, and your time to Normal for years, for decades, to try to help legalize. Guys like Bob Marley, for example, somebody who was always upfront about his cannabis use and promoting the legalization of it, right? But, you know, you get a guy like James Franco, who will star in Pineapple Express, make a ton of money off of that, but then is silent, absent, just nowhere to be seen when it comes to Prop 64 legalization. And I think, well, at least I hope, that we as cannabis consumers take this into account when we're evaluating these new cannabis brands, and that we put our money toward the ones who've been good to us. We put our money toward the celebrities who've had our back and have supported our fight, and we turn it away from the celebrities that are just, you know, jumping on the bandwagon now that it's popular, now that it's safe to be so pro-pot. I would love to see more celebrity involvement in this. I'd love to see more sports involvement in this. You know, right now the athletes are on this at this level where they're you know, starting to recognize the medical aspect. We get the football players now that are saying, you know, we need to have CBD, we need to have cannabis for concussion, for chronic pain, to get away off the opioid painkillers. NFL and these football players, great, you made it to the 1990s, as far as our understanding goes. Let's jump forward a bit here. Let's start talking about not whether we're doing a bad thing by keeping medicine from people that could use it. Let's talk about how we're harming people by criminalizing their drug use. That's part of how I think these guys could get themselves more ingratiated into, you know, publicly fighting this drug war, is to remember that it's not so much we convince people that marijuana is awesome, although it is. It's not so much we convince people marijuana is awesome. We've got to convince them that prohibition is unacceptable, that prohibition is detrimental, that prohibition is harmful, more harmful than anything they think marijuana would do. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, one more segment here, live from Vancouver, BC. All sorts of people hanging out. We'll see if we can get them on the mic.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
Oh, let the marijuana llama tell you something now. About a game for your phone, gonna make you say, wow! The game's about the game of growing cannabis for cash. Grow the seeds, sell the bud, put the savings in the stash. Little by little, your empire grows large. Put the big celebrities inside your entourage. You can choose to play with Snoop or me or Cheech and Chong. Cypress Hill, Willie Nelson, Wiz Khalifa with a bong. The name of the game is Hemping, that's the point. Download and play while you light yourself a joint. The business of cannabis should be no crime. Hemp Inc. is even hot proofed by the man who run High Times. Oh yeah, get it on Android and iOS today. Marijuana Llama out. Got to tend to me on crops, you know. Money don't make itself. Hemp Inc.
We love the earth.
I'm Radical Russ Belville, inviting you to join me every weekday on CannabisRadio.com for the Russ Belville Show. It's the NPR of POT. We bring you the latest marijuana headlines, cannabis analysis, drug war data, activist interviews, radical rants, and your live calls. Join me every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, live only on CannabisRadio.com.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, where we don't change our mind on decriminalization during an election year.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Yar, Darby Pirates here. Arr, 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 arr.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We are live here from Vancouver, British Columbia, as we're winding up the International Cannabis Business Conference. It's been a great show. Today's keynote, Brendan Kennedy from Privateer Holdings delivered that. We'll get that for you on our SoundCloud page sometime later this weekend. But joining me here at the desk, a good friend of the show and one of the leading attorneys in the nation of Canada, Kirk Tusaw, is here with us. How you doing, Kirk?
I'm doing great, Russ. Thanks for having me on.
And what are your feelings about this this conference? Any interesting things you've picked up or controversies we can dish on?
Yeah, you know, it's been a really great event, and the ICBC, I think, does a fantastic job, and it's been a privilege for me to participate. I think it's hit the right note of a blend between sort of socially conscious activism and business, two areas of the cannabis world that, as you know, are often in conflict, and there seems to be a significant chunk of the cannabis reform movement that really doesn't like the business-oriented aspect of things, and there's a chunk of the business world that sort of looks at the pioneers and the innovators and the activists as sort of part of the so-called 420 crowd and not something they want associated with their, you know, now mainstream products. This conference, I think, did not feature much of that sort of clashes or those sort of conflicts. Brendan Kennedy, who you mentioned just a moment ago, of course, Privateer Holdings is the owner or funder of Tilray, which is a licensed producer here in Canada in the medical cannabis system. And Tilray's been a real focal point of controversy up here because their tactics have been perceived by many to be more American in nature, more cutthroat, more slamming the competition, in this case, dispensaries. And I thought there were, you know, Brendan took questions, and I sort of shook my head and thought, well, if there's going to be that conflict, if there's going to be that sort of pot drama unfolding at this conference, it's going to be now, because someone's going to get a hold of the mic and they're going to let him have it over Tilray. And that didn't manifest, you know. And the things that Brendan said, I thought, were very positive in terms of, you know, socially conscious investing, using brands to affect political change, ensuring that there's a role for both big and small business in the new emergent legal industry, but not the new industry of cannabis, because it's obviously quite an old industry.
Been around here for a while.
So, you know, I hopefully those kinds of positive relations can continue, and that a lot of bridges were built here over this last couple of days.
Yeah, let's hope so. I mean, trying to keep these corporations and capitalism focused on more socially conscious endeavors is difficult. I mean, the general arc, I think, is away from that. And so it's going to be, I think, hard for cannabis consumers and operators to maintain that that direction. But, man, I got my fingers crossed on it. Here in Canada, of course, we've got Health Canada and the medical system, which I understand is by mail. Is that correct? You said something about dispensaries, though. So how does that work?
Well, you know, we've got two parallel systems. We've got the legal system regulated by Health Canada. The only lawful access to cannabis for medical purposes on the commercial level is a now called the ACMPR, the Access to Cannabis for Medical Purposes Regulation. It has a commercial aspect, and there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through to become a commercial producer and sell to patients directly. It has a personal and caregiver home production or personal production aspect that we had to fight in the courts to reestablish here in Canada. And fortunately, we were victorious in those court battles, and we have reestablished that system. And then we have this sort of outside the regulated sphere dispensary model, which, you know, I live on Vancouver Island. It's not a very big place. And we've got 60 dispensaries on Vancouver Island.
Wow.
We've got a few hundred in Vancouver, in British Columbia. We've got probably 1,000 in the country. Every single one of these businesses is completely illegal. violating the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act, breaking the law, laundering the proceeds of crime. But they are also the pioneers of the industry in many respects, at least the early dispensaries were. And so through battles in the courts, through battles in the court of public opinion, and through consumers now voting with their wallets and with their feet and going to these dispensaries, I think that there's been a change in the public's perception of how you can sell cannabis in a storefront and have the sky not fall. There's been a change in municipal government perspective of how to best get a handle on these businesses. And there's been a change in enforcement priority amongst the police forces of Canada, where, you know, times are tough, you got limited resources. Do you want to spend them fighting real crime, or do you want to spend them raiding dispensaries who are operating in your communities with the full support of your members of your community, because they go there and shop?
Yeah.
You know, that's the part that we can't leave out of the equation. Every time you spend a dollar in a dispensary, you're voting for that method of access. So it's been really wild to see it all develop. It's going to continue to be wild up here. A rough and rocky road for some, a fascinating road for others, and I don't think it's going to change anytime soon.
Well, of course, the other side of it is federal marijuana legalization, something that Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party campaigned on, which I've understood lately has kind of been a bit of foot dragging. And the other piece of news I picked up was one of the health ministers saying the minimum age ought to be 25, and other people saying it ought to match Canada's 19-year-old drinking age.
Yeah, it's, you know, we are moving towards legalization. The Prime Minister's promised to introduce legislation in the spring. We've had a process where the task force has been going around Canada for the last couple months talking to people about how best to legalize. Not whether to legalize, but how best to legalize. And we'd be, you know, only the second country in the world to have a federal legalization system in place. And I think it's fair to say that a lot of people are watching. And so the government wants to get it right, and they're taking their time. I don't blame them for that. I think it's too important to rush. We could make better progress, and we could move more quickly in the area of stop arresting people for simple possession, stop prosecuting medical cannabis dispensaries. Let's get out of the business of continuing the victims of prohibition, their criminalization. That's something we could do in the short term, and I think the government should be criticized for not doing that. But in terms of, you know, getting the system right, it's going to take some time. I don't expect cannabis to be legalized in Canada until sometime in probably early 2018. As for this, I mean, 25 years of age. Look, everyone knows the demographic that most consumes cannabis is under 25.
18 to 25,
right? That's
yeah.
Right. So you begin to age out after a while. That's probably going to change with legalization and normalization. At least I hope it does. But this is an idea floated mostly by special interest groups that are trying to do whatever they can to preserve the last vestiges of prohibition. I have no doubt that the age for purchasing cannabis in a store is going to be the same as the age of majority in Canada, which is actually determined provincially. In most provinces, it's actually 19. In a couple of provinces, it's 18. That's why the drinking age in Quebec is 18 and not 19. There's no reason it would be any different for cannabis. And in fact, I think if it were any different, you know, our charter protects us against discrimination on the basis of age in Section 15. And I think that's a classic discrimination lawsuit right there, because if you're 24 years and 364 days old and you're a criminal for buying cannabis, but then on your birthday you're not a criminal anymore, you know, that's just sort of ridiculous.
In the states, of course, we got five states that are voting on legalization. California prime among them, and I'm sure there's a lot of influence that this will have over Canadian politics. But our opponents, the Kevin Sabets of the world, their talking points lately, their reefer madness has been about the gummy bears and big marijuana as this corporate predator. Is there a difference with Canadian reefer madness other than it being more polite?
Well, I mean, no, not fundamentally. You still hear the same sort of tropes. Right, and you know, I get it. The kids are concerned that, you know, someone's going to pick up a gummy bear and eat it. But, you know, what do they do when you go to the pharmacy and you get prescription narcotic drugs? They tell you, look, this could be dangerous. Store it safely. Well, that's all you need to do for cannabis. People are responsible. They tend to be responsible. There's no significant downside to accidental ingestion. No one's going to die from eating too many gummy bears. You know, but that said, a responsible business would also listen to the concerns of consumers and say, well, look, maybe there's a way that we can proactively assuage some of these concerns, either through packaging, through labeling, or through putting your product into alternative forms of ingestion that maybe aren't attractive to children. I think it's much ado about nothing and a lot of reefer madness generally, but in an emergent legal regime, you know, as an industry, as a self-regulating industry heretofore, we need to be alive to this. We can't just poo-poo people's concerns, even when empirically they may not be justified, because, you know, people have these beliefs, and we can't pretend that they don't.
Yeah, it's your perception is reality, and most people don't smoke pot. So we got to keep that in mind when we're trying to get the votes.
Well, that's right. I mean, the majority of people are not cannabis consumers, and they don't quite understand the nuances of some of these issues, and that's okay. Like, we have to continue to educate people, and we have to understand that the system we end up with tomorrow is not the system we'll have in 10 years. I was on a panel recently with a lawyer that represents craft brewers of beer in British Columbia, and another lawyer that represents the VQA, the Vintners Quality Association, self-regulating wine authority in British Columbia. And they're complaining about these ridiculous rules that government has saddled their industry with that stifles innovation, imposes costs that don't need to be there. And, hey, I'm looking at these guys going, man, you guys got it good. Your products are legal. Yeah. You get to make them and sell them, and I can go across the street to my local vineyard and have a glass of wine and a nice salad. I really hope 100 years from now the cannabis folks are not beating their heads against the same brick wall. So it takes time. We're 100 years out alcohol prohibition, and the vestiges of it remain today in some of our archaic policies. So it's a journey. It's not a light switch.
I'm glad you mentioned the craft brewers, the vintners, because I think that speaks to this scare of big marijuana and the corporatization of weed. You know, I live in Portland, Oregon. You can find Budweiser, Coors, and Miller if you want to.
Gotta go looking hard, though.
But we've got craft brews right across the street, a place I can fill a growler from 40 different taps of local craft brews. I think that's going to apply to the boutique growers as well here in Kansas.
Well, I think so, and it's driven by consumer demand, right? Anheuser-Busch spends $1 billion in North America just on advertising to create demand for their product and increase their market share.
Because they have to.
And lots of people like that and drink that, but lots of people don't. And as long as the consumer has a variety of choices, I think that lots of people are going to gravitate towards the higher quality craft batches, craft products. Love Portland, one of my favorite cities in the world, for precisely that reason. I love beer. I love craft beer. I love being able to go to a pub, neighborhood pub, a small business run by a family. That's selling, you know, 18 types of sour beer. That's fantastic. And there's no reason we can't have that kind of economic activity, those kinds of benefits to lower middle class Canadians, entrepreneurs and innovators right here in Canada. I just hope we get it soon and get it right.
Kirk Tusaw is a fabulous cannabis attorney here in Canada and has argued successfully at the Canadian Supreme Court. We appreciate your wisdom and insight on this. Do you have any contact information you'd like to give out if people want to reach you?
Yeah, sure. If people want to keep up with what's going on with me and with Canadian policy reform, I'd urge them to look at my website, which is tusawlaw.ca, TOUSAWLAW.ca. I'm on Twitter at Kirk Tusaw and at Tusaw Law. And keep in touch with Normal Canada as well, an organization that I happen to be a part of. And, we need support. We need international support as we move towards legalization. We need people from outside of Canada telling the government of Canada, hey, listen to these guys. They've got the right ideas.
Fantastic. Thank you, Kirk. And stay tuned, folks. We'll be back to wrap things up here in Vancouver right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Forwarding the cause of legalization and research of the growing cannabis industry, one podcast at a time. The Cannabis Radio Network.
The 2016 Southwest Cannabis Conference and Expo is only days away, October 14th through the 16th in Phoenix. Register right now at swccexpo2016.com. Check out over 100 exhibitors showcasing their businesses and the new advances being made in medical and legal cannabis markets. Plus, a can't-miss exclusive discussion on Arizona's Proposition 205. Check out over 100 exhibitors and thousands of cannabis professionals in Phoenix, October 14th through the 16th. Last-minute registration is open now at swccexpo2016.com.
The political climate is at a fever pitch, and the fight for the social fabric of America is set for battle this November. Tuesday, November 8th, the Cannabis Liberation Movement takes a huge step forward, and Cannabis Radio is here to chronicle this legendary moment. CannabisRadio.com and the Cannabis Radio News team will feature wall-to-wall live coverage of all the coast-to-coast voting of state amendments, ballots, propositions, and initiatives that will further progress the cannabis crusade. Join us November 8th for Vote 2016, the path to cannabis freedom, only on CannabisRadio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
We have to bring back law and order.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
Marijuana legalization is a worldwide phenomenon. Get yourself positioned for the global cannabis marketplace by attending the International Cannabis Business Conference in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. You'll learn from established cannabis professionals, elected officials, and internationally recognized marijuana law reform activists.
You'll also enjoy the ICBC's famous VIP party featuring ICBC special guest speaker and Canadian native Tommy Chong. The ICBC is happening in Vancouver on Thursday and Friday, October 13th and 14th at the Hyatt Regency. Log on to internationalcbc.com today to reserve your tickets. That's internationalcbc.com, and bookmark our page for the next ICBCs taking place in Berlin, Germany and San Francisco, California. Don't miss the International Cannabis Business Conference, internationalcbc.com.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, folks. Welcome back. We are just winding up here at the International Cannabis Business Conference in Vancouver, BC. My thanks to Alex Rogers, the promoter of the conference, for having us out here for this live coverage. We've got the morning panels and keynotes from both days will be available on the on my SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/RadicalRuss. We'll get to that later on this weekend. And it's just been a great time here in Canada. I always enjoy it when I'm here. And the people, of course, very friendly, and everything you've heard about Canada is true. They're just wonderful, wonderful folks. Love the money. I mentioned that earlier. Beautiful, colorful money. If you've not gotten a chance to see the new Canadian bills, you should take a look. They're very, very pretty. And we'll be back here for other conferences, I'm absolutely certain, as our coverage continues to grow internationally. And speaking of international, this conference will be held in Berlin, Germany in April of next year. And we will be there. It'll be my first ever trip to Europe. I am so looking forward to it. But we're going to head to Berlin, Germany for the International Cannabis Business Conference when it takes place. And there are plans now to get the conference in Sydney, Australia. It'll be my first visit down under. And in Prague in the Czech Republic. So that would be great. And as my friend Joy Beckerman points out, you know, between Sydney, Australia and Prague, Czech Republic, we're talking about two of the big centers for industrial hemp as well, which is something I am endeavoring to include more in this show on industrial hemp. Some of the developments that are happening now are just fascinating, especially the microcellulose, you know, applications in energy capacitors, you know, battery storage technologies that could really unlock the potential of wind power and solar power and tidal power and a lot of these alternative energies, where the problem is you need to store the power. They're not consistent, right? Our power grids, our alternating current, is built on a consistent flow of power. And, you know, the wind don't always blow, right? The sun don't always shine. So it's not as consistent as, you know, burning a coal plant or running a nuclear plant or a hydroelectric dam or something like that. Hemp could actually replace the graphene in batteries at 1/1,000th the cost. And so that's the problem with all these alternative fuels right now, all these alternative energies, these natural powered energies, is there's no the storage, the battery costs so much to store the power to make a continuous flow that you've lost the cost effectiveness of it. And the environmental aspect of the heavy metals and materials that are going into these batteries kind of obliterates the environmental friendliness of the wind and the solar and the tidal. Well, if you reduce the cost down to 1/1,000th and you're growing it from a plant that sucks in carbon dioxide, oh my God, you're attacking the problem and helping to solve the problem again. It's just amazing. So we'll have more industrial hemp as we continue developing the show. That's all the time we got for today, and that's it for the week. Time flies when you legalize, folks. We'll be back with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community next week, right here on the Russ Belville Show. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You're growing, you're giant, you're rolling, you're smoking.
you take a scene, you manage, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you manage, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.